Hello, I'm Alberto Salvato. Welcome to Crime Time, a Virginia criminal law podcast. I'm here with Anna Dvorak, Anthony Norse, and Ann Thayer. Enjoy the show.
So here it is, legal disclaimer, because we are lawyers and we've got to write one. So if you are listening to this podcast, thank you. We sincerely hope you are listening to this podcast for its entertainment value and not with the intention of acquiring legal advice for any individual case or situation. I mean, come on, you wouldn't take advice from someone you have never met or spoken to directly, right? If you were bleeding profusely, you wouldn't listen to a podcast in hopes of a bandage somehow materializing over the internet and onto your 3D printer. Seeking actual legal advice can be just as important as a tourniquet. The hosts of this podcast are in no way intending to create an attorney-client relationship with any listener. Sorry, we are sure you all are great people, but we cannot stress enough how little we know of you and your case. And rather than risk an awkward moment, let us just remember we have never met. Nothing on this platform should be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation. We are just a group of friends with differing opinions and viewpoints, which we will try to explore through discussions of current events, law changes, and whatever else floats our fancy.
In this episode, how do you find the right attorney? At some point in many people's lives, they're going to have to hire an attorney. Knowing how to find the right one is a difficult decision, a difficult problem that many of us face. What do you ask? Where do you go? How do you get referrals? Do you really want to ask your friends for an attorney if you're charged with a crime? Well, today we have, again, Blake Willison, who was subbing for me while I was out doing my, you know, my vacation, getting a tumor cut out of my head. Blake, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, Alberto. I tried to keep the Alberto seat open for you and warm, but I love the magic in watching how the A-team works.
It's fantastic. Well, I appreciate you filling in. Done a great job. I've enjoyed listening to at least the first 5 or 10 minutes before I fell asleep listening to your voice, Blake. But that's just me. I blame the tumor and the brain surgery, but everyone else sounded fantastic and energetic.
Well, I'd love to listen to you guys yammer away, but can we talk about hiring a lawyer, please?
We can. So one of the things that happens, and this is something that I find to be a problem. So imagine you get charged with a crime, and since most of us, all of us actually do criminal defense cases, and it's an embarrassing charge. It could be something to do with sexual assault, something to do with, God forbid, child pornography. And I'm not saying us specifically, but someone in this situation, you're not exactly going to go to a friend and ask for a referral because A, you don't want them to know that you've been charged with a criminal offense. And oftentimes your friends may not even want to let you know that they know a criminal attorney. So what do you do? How do you go about finding one? Do you go to the internet? Do you open up a phone book if they still have those or what?
I think what we definitely have seen in the last few years is certainly the internet, but we have people getting letters at home from different lawyers, especially when it comes to criminal charges. And I wouldn't say that necessarily happens on a murder charge, but you would definitely see it on something like traffic offenses, DUIs, and small criminal offenses. You will see people getting letters at their home from multiple lawyers saying that they could go to jail, they should hire them, all the different information. Some letters are more vague than others, but that often happens.
One of the problems with those letters, though, is it alerts everybody in the household when you suddenly get 10 or 15 lawyer letters that there's something going on. And it's going to cause your family members to ask you why you're getting all these lawyer letters.
Which is an important public service announcement. So that after you get charged, that usually hits the next couple of days. So keep an eye on your mail and then just quickly throw it away before anybody else can see it if you live with anybody else.
have a nice little conversation with a mailman or mailwoman and say, listen, anything that looks like this, please deliver it to my next door neighbor. I'll get it from them later.
Well, and I think a big way a lot of attorneys get cases is through referrals. So either people that know you, your family, your neighbors, your friends or your kids' friends' parents or old clients that you've had who refer you cases or come back. So I think you all like have a big referral practice where you either get referred cases from other attorneys in other practice areas or other people that you know in the different areas of your life. I mean, I think that's a big way that we all get retained on cases.
That's probably the best way. I usually get the most successful clients that way is from referrals. Yeah, exactly. And many times people will say that they were referred from someone, even if they were not, because clients clients feel as if they have a personal connection. They may not be able to name the referral. They'll just say it. They believe that the attorney will try, or not try harder, but at least have a little bit more, give them a little bit more attention. I know my firm's done advertisements on TV. We've done advertisements on the internet as well. And we've actually, in Maryland, I know we've had advertisements show up on bus stops, you know, thinking that, hey, if you have a suspended license, you're going to be driving the bus a lot and might as well see our name on that. But we found it very difficult to track those because I don't think many people want to tell their attorney that they found or got our number from a poster at a bus stop. They'd much rather say, oh, I got it from a friend or somebody told me to call. Because frankly, the referral system is a much better way to do it. It's good for the attorney to have that because they know that they've had a successful practice if they get a lot of referrals too.
Well, I think what Alberto was saying at the beginning was that some people are embarrassed to tell their friends and neighbors about a referral, but a lot of people have maybe relationships with an estate planning lawyer or an immigration lawyer, other people like that, where it's not that embarrassing to talk about those particular issues. And they ask those people, hey, do you have a criminal defense lawyer you would refer? And that's one of the best ways of asking another lawyer in a different practice area. That's usually one of the best ways of getting a more sound referral for an attorney.
That's a good point, Anna, because you know you can ask anybody for the name of any attorney and say, hey, do you know an attorney? I have an issue. Just call it a legal issue. Do you have the name of an attorney that I could talk to? And most attorneys, once you consult with them, the attorney's not supposed to tell your friend what it is that you're charged with. So that attorney, even if they don't do your field of practice or field of law, they most likely will know somebody who can get in contact with an attorney who can service you and hopefully service you in the right way.
And I don't even confirm if I have that client. So it's not even just about telling them what they're charged with. But if a friend or somebody that referred me, somebody says, hey, did so-and-so hire you? I just tell them I can't talk about my clients. And I don't even confirm that the person's hired me or not, just because I think that's part of the confidentiality that you're, you know, getting into with the client that did retain you.
You're absolutely right. I mean, unless the referral comes into the office, which has happened to me before, and they say, hey, you represented me here. I'm bringing in my son. I'm bringing in my cousin. At that point, there, I feel pretty comfortable.
Yeah, that's different.
But you're absolutely right. Some people will come in and give me the name. And I said, I can't tell you one way or the other if he or she was my client.
Yeah, they're looking for a discount.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, I've actually had that where they said, you charged the other guy this much. Why are you charging me this different amount? And it's a completely different case and completely different facts. But they got the price from the other guy and they want to get the same price regardless of the new charge that they have. And that sometimes is frustrating.
You could tell him it's because you're guilty and he wasn't. No, I'm just joking.
All Tony's clients are innocent.
Oh, that is
every
correct.
Every single one of them.
And they all deserve apologies. And
but there's other services on the internet too. You have Avvo, and I have a lot of these.
I don't think Avvo is as big anymore.
It's not as big. They have a lot of these attorney referral systems. They came and went. I don't know. I have a lot of issues with them. I have a lot of issues with even Yelp reviews and Google reviews and things
like that.
Right.
Any kind of online review, because anybody can write any kind of review, regardless if they're an angry client and you did a great job for them. They might just be unhappy and write a bad review, even though you got a great result. So I would say take any of these reviews that you see online with a grain of salt, just because you don't know what the motivation is behind that particular review.
You can hire companies to push off negative reviews.
That's right.
You can do that, but you can also pay people. I know people pay people to do reviews, and you know, there's certain law firms that have like 110 Google reviews. If you read through enough of them, some of them are the exact same. Some of them just with a different name. And I'm like, that's interesting. You had the exact same experience. But
or they're just one-liners or something like that. Very quick reviews. Those are sometimes telltale signs that they are not genuine reviews.
And there's just, I mean, it's like telling your client you can do online community service. There's all sorts of services to pad those numbers, and anybody is willing to do anything. And it's not, so to speak, false advertising, but it definitely walks a line. I mean, I think everybody here does online marketing. Everybody here, to a certain extent, you know, Anne's really proficient in a lot of places.
Tony, how's your online marketing?
My online marketing is very robust. I think it might have a single static webpage. I'm not certain about that though.
Yep. I would definitely call Tony's robust. That's exactly.
But I take the opposite approach. Like, I think it's important to educate people. Like, nobody needs us till they need us, right? Like, you don't go out today planning to get arrested or get a speeding ticket or have your kid get in trouble or any of those things. And the bottom line is things happen. And for people that have connections to people in the legal community or have a neighbor that they know that does law that can refer them or whatever the situation is, that's great. But there's a lot of people that don't know where to turn. And so if it's been somebody maybe that you went to high school with and they saw, oh, this person does criminal law and I never really knew that, you're in their mind already if you're educating and you know, keeping people up to date on like different things that happen in the legal field. And that's what I do. So I don't put a lot of advertisements out on my like social media and things like that, but I'd put either like funny things that deal with the criminal justice or updates about legal issues or, you know, things of that nature, just so people, you're in people's heads in case it comes to the point that either they need an attorney or they know somebody that needs one. They're like, oh yeah, my friend or so-and-so does that. Here's their information. You know,
I think you've been into people's heads with your TikTok.
I don't really do as many of them. I haven't had time to do.
Well, you do more than any of us.
Blake, if you do a TikTok, I would start subscribing to TikTok.
That's not going to happen.
Well, then I guess I'm never going to subscribe because it's only if you do one. So that's really where I am. I think Anne does a really good job of marketing. It's classy and it gives really good content to people and it gives it in small bites. So, you know, when you're on Instagram and you see something, it gives you the small bite about it. But as Anne said, it's not like where people are like, I wonder what it would be like to get arrested. Let me see what kind of attorneys are out there. You're usually looking when you're under the gun, when you're like, crap, this happened. I've got to get something together.
So let's talk about that. Like you're under the gun, you're trying to find somebody. Like what should you be looking for when you're trying to hire an attorney?
First of all, you need to find an attorney you could talk to before hiring them and make sure you feel comfortable with them. The number one factor, in my opinion, is feeling a sense of comfort when you do talk to the attorney about your case and you feel comfortable leaving, knowing that this attorney has been there before, has handled a case similar to yours, and is able to explain to you what the process is. And that, to me, goes miles as far as, you know, whether or not you should hire that attorney. Because, look, listen, and you may do TikTok, but you have a lot of substance. So when people actually meet you, they know that you know what you're doing. Other people, they have a lot of flair. They have a lot of marketing out there. They get you in the door, and then there's just no substance with their consultation with you. And you may feel compelled to hire because their office looks fantastic. They may arrive at the appointment, or you go into the parking lot, they have tons of Mercedes sitting in there and they look super successful. But I've seen some of the most well-dressed attorneys in court just be terrible. So you need to just talk to the attorney first and feel comfortable with the person you're going
to
choose.
And you need to understand the attorney's interviewing you as much as you're interviewing them. Not everybody is right for each other. So while it may be a great lawyer, maybe they don't communicate in a way that gives you the warm fuzzies and makes you feel like you're comfortable opening up with the things you need to do to let them fight your case for you. So sometimes those things come into play too, whereas, you know, it's not just you deciding which lawyer. The lawyer gets to pick if they want you to be a client that they want to fight for as well.
Yeah.
Tell all of my potential clients is call another lawyer also. Get a second opinion, just like with the doctor. Just because you think this is a good fit, at least talk to one other lawyer just to make sure that there's not somebody who's a better fit for you that you feel more comfortable with. And most of the time they will call me back later, but I always like them to get a second opinion.
See, we're totally different.
Do they call you back to say that they hired somebody else?
They do.
it's usually me and I just charge $50 less.
I mean, I have a different philosophy. When someone comes into my office, I usually ask them how they got there. But at that point, like we talk, I explain to them how I work. I explain to them what my fee is, what goes into that. We get to know each other. And as Anne said, I'm interviewing them. Are they a good fit for me? Can I help them? Will they, you know, listen to me? And was this a good fit in that way. But it's also just, I think if someone came to me and says, you know, I have a charge in Richmond, I'd say, well, I don't go to Richmond for this case. Like I will give you a referral. I will do something else. Like one other really important thing is when you go and talk to an attorney, I mean, now we can do like Zoom consults and stuff. You want an attorney that knows what it's like on the ground, that goes, you know, everybody here, I think, goes to most of the courts in Northern Virginia. So that means like Loudoun, Prince William, Alexandria, Arlington, Fairfax. Every once in a while, I'll be out in Fauquier, but I think, you know, Blake, you go down to Spotsylvania and Fredericksburg and Stafford sometimes, and so does Tony and Ann. But, you know, in Northern Virginia courts, people go to a fair number more. But, you know, depending on your case, you want somebody who knows what it's like on the ground and is there a lot. But that's an important question to ask when you're talking to a lawyer. But I would also say just, you know, you're interviewing the person, but in obviously prices price is always an option because you got to figure out how you can pay for things. And lawyers will come at you and say it's $500 for a DUI. And this another lawyer will tell you it's $3,500 for a DUI. And it's like a black box for a lot of people. And so ask a lot of questions about what goes into their fees and what kind of work do they expect to do and what kind of experience is going on there.
And make sure you sign a retainer. Virginia doesn't require it, but it's encouraged. And that helps you if the lawyer is not doing what they're supposed to be doing or there becomes a time where there is a dispute. You want to have the terms there. So one, you're clear on what they're providing you in terms of services, but also what rights you have and what happens if things go bad. Either you want to get rid of them or they want to get rid of you. If you've signed a retainer and you have that, that's really helpful to you going forward. And I know there's some attorneys that don't do them, but I do them in each and every case, and I won't get started till I have it.
Yeah, I've got a retainer.
The one thing also, I was going to say, look, if you go into an office and you feel like you're meeting a car salesman instead of an attorney, I'd probably be pretty wary of that too. It shouldn't be such a hard sale. And I think most of us here, all of us here, probably just, we stick to the facts. We stick to, this is most likely what's going to happen. This is what we have to prepare for. This is what we have to do. It's not necessarily a, hey, we're going to get you out. No attorney is going to say, you got this guarantee. We're going to win. Be very careful of any attorney who does that. Anytime a guarantee comes out of the mouth of an attorney, I would just really be very apprehensive.
Well, we're just not allowed to give guarantees. I mean, that's the bottom line. I can't, you know, my past results are not indicative of future results. Like you cannot. Every case is different. I might think you have a good case. I might think that we're 99.9% going to win, but I cannot guarantee you that because I've seen situations where a slam dunk case has gone wrong and vice versa. And you pull the wrong set of folks and judges and other things, or a fact comes out that you didn't know about that really changes things. And lawyers just, you know, lawyers can't guarantee you things. And I know you want to be guaranteed that charges will go away and won't be part of your life, but it's just not ethical for us to say that.
The other thing is we can't wave a magic wand and just fix your whole case either. When you hire an attorney, it doesn't mean that you're not a part of your case. You are part of the team that's on your defense. And there are things that your attorney needs from you, whether it's witness information, the documents or videos that might help prove your innocence or whatever it may be. You can't just hire an attorney and then disappear. You need to keep in touch with your attorney and you need to respond to them when they need the things from you that you've told them about that they think are going to be helpful in your case, because we can't know those things without your help and we can't do it without your participation in it. And you have to be as invested in your case as your attorney is, because that's how we try to get you the best outcome.
And that doesn't mean go on Google and try to learn the law and prepare memos and provide the attorney with suggestions on when to object.
Well, see, I don't mind when my clients like try to give things like that, but I always just tell them, I appreciate when sometimes they have good insight for you. Like they have an idea that maybe you didn't think of or something like that. But if you're going online and Googling or listening to all these other people who are telling you, oh, well, so-and-so told me it should be this way, then maybe that attorney is not right for you. Because if you can't put your faith in that attorney to fight for you, then it's probably not the right person. And you should probably look for somebody that is going to be more to your liking in terms of how they communicate and how they're handling your case.
Right. If you're questioning their advice, then don't hire them. Or after you hire, if that's what's happening, then you can quickly terminate the relationship and find someone else. I mean, that is always fine. People get hired all the time and then go to a different lawyer and just say, you know, this other person, I'm just not getting a great vibe, or they don't communicate as much as I like to. Like, you know, there's some lawyers I know who are great, but their bedside manner is the worst. I mean, they're never, you know, they don't communicate well, but I know them very well. And I've seen them try cases and I know they'll do a great job. But when it comes to communicating with their clients and really explaining things, they don't have the time. And that's just their personality. And it doesn't mean they're not good at their job. But if you need somebody who's much more, you know that yourself, and you know if you need somebody who's more of a handholder, then, and I don't mean the handholder in a bad way, you just, this is a really traumatic time. And if you need to be able to call that person a couple times more than like zero, then the non-bedside manner guy is the wrong person for you.
There is one thing that I think only good attorneys have, and that's an 8-inch scar on the right side of their head. And if you find an attorney with that scar, I would hire that attorney immediately because they're going
preferably to do a great job. The form of an S as well, I think.
Yeah. It looks like an S. and only pay cash. That'd be great. But Anna, one thing I was going to say, if you know, you can always get out of a case or terminate your relationship, but you may be on the hook for whatever's been earned. So remember that it's not an automatic refund of all the fees that you get, but the attorney should be able to explain to you how they came about charging the fees that they earned while they were representing you. And it could be going to court, preparing for the case, all that stuff. It takes time. Calls with the attorney, those take time, and the attorney should be compensated for that. And it's quantum merit. Is that the Latin term? That
unjust enrichment, my friend.
Unjust enrichment. Wow.
But you have a contract and you've done work on that contract and your hours are billed to that. Even those of us who work a flat fee, if I put 5 hours into a case and you decide to go with someone else, those 5 hours you get compensated per the contract. But that's something to talk again. That's why interviewing an attorney and maybe, as Tony suggests, several attorneys to make a decision about a really important case. Now, there's a difference between, like, I have a speeding ticket and I don't want points. The attorney that you get there, you know, you're looking for somebody who focuses on traffic infractions. You don't want the murder attorney for that person, right? There's a different fee structure for that person. And they're from very good traffic lawyers who mostly just do traffic infractions. But you've got to know what you're looking for. That same guy may not be the right fit for your child porn case or your sexual assault or murder case. So just because you like somebody and you may hit it off with them doesn't mean they have the experience to do your case. So really, when you have a serious case, you really want to deep dive into whether or not that person has the experience and not just the bedside manner that you're looking for.
Not necessarily just the experience, but also the experience in that particular jurisdiction where you're at. Not necessarily, an attorney doesn't have to be there all the time to know what's expected from the bench, but they should have at least a fair amount of experience appearing before that bench in that particular jurisdiction or dealing with the prosecutors. It's just knowing how that process and the local procedures go. That's something that's very valuable as well. So that's maybe something you should ask an attorney when you're talking to them.
And something we haven't talked about, sometimes a family member hires an attorney on behalf of a juvenile, like their kid or even adult children, you know, or maybe a husband wants to hire you for his wife and they're in jail and those type things. You have to remember that who the client is in those situations. And if Alberto's hiring us to represent his wife, she's the client. And we have to do what that client wants. And that client gets the attorney confidentiality and all those things. And that stuff has to be set out. And that's true. Even if, let's say, Anna hired somebody for her kid, right? Anna is the one hiring us, but the kid is really the client and the duties to the juvenile, right? And so I make it very clear with parents when they hire me for their kid, look, I got to talk to this kid by themselves. And I got to make sure that this kid knows that everything they tell me gets the same attorney-client privilege that an adult would have. And some parents aren't okay with that. And if they tell me, I'm not going to let you do that, then I say I'm not the right attorney. And sometimes attorneys have to turn a client down, whether it's for something like that, or whether it's because, you know, they're Googling their own case and they want you to handle it a certain way. And you know that that's not the way the law works. And you know, it's going to be a problem moving forward and you don't want to deal with it, whatever the reasons are. Those expectations and the reality of what's going on and who the client is and what things the attorney is supposed to be doing have to be set out from the beginning, because if it's not clear, it can cause a lot of problems down the road if issues arise.
I've actually had parents who have told me they want to have consequences for their child and they don't want the child to be found not guilty and they want some kind of punishment. I tell them that's not my job. My job is to do the best job for the person who's my client. And sometimes the parents are taken aback that I'm trying to do something fantastic for the kid, even though they think the kid needs to learn a lesson through this process.
And in those situations, I'll tell them, look, I'm talking to you now. You want me to represent you. I'll advocate for you with the prosecutor or whoever, and you can find someone else for your kid, you know, if you want to have a voice in the courtroom. I've done that with some people, but, you know, usually I turn those cases down because, like you said, we want to fight for the person that's charged, and you don't lose your rights just because you're a kid. Like, you still get the same rights that you would as an adult, no matter who's paying the bill.
No, I actually have a separate representation agreement for that situation where somebody's paying the bill and somebody else is a client, just so everybody is very crystal clear on the paper who's getting the professional services versus who's paying the bill.
All right, that's a good idea.
Like those domestic cases where you get hired to represent the witness and, you know, the husband's the defendant, he's paying the bill. He doesn't want the wife to testify. She doesn't want to testify, but, you know, if she doesn't really have a Fifth Amendment right and maybe you got to counsel her and say, hey, you shouldn't let this guy off. He's going to keep beating you. She's the client. Right.
I actually had that one time where I was hired by the complaining witness. And I think the defendant thought it was so she wouldn't have to testify. She told me, no, I want to make sure that there's some kind of consequence for him. So I was in this strange position of telling the prosecutor, don't give up on this one. We need to go forward with the prosecution. It was very
awesome. I don't know, like those are always hard, but there's also situations where the person's not involved, just like the parent situation. Here's an interesting question is, let's say I pay for another adult's representation, and I pay an attorney who's represented to me that they've done a ton of these serious federal RICO actions, right? But when in actuality, that's not the case. They've never, ever done, they don't even do criminal law. They saw dollar signs. And so they're going to hire, and then they just pay this person who, you know, the lawyer racks up bills, and all of a sudden they're just super high and nothing's getting better for the defendant. And I've always wondered, does the person paying have any cause of action, like breach of contract or fraud or whatever else, against the lawyer? Because obviously a client would have, like, you could make a bar complaint, or maybe if they're innocent, a malpractice action, but they're not the contracting party for the payment of the services, right? Like, to get the payment's not coming from the client. The payment's coming from these other people. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Well, wouldn't all that be covered in the retainer?
And I suppose... It would depend on if they really breached their contract. If they're not doing anything to help the client, I suppose that could be a breach. If they're doing something and doing their best, I'm not sure if there would be a breach of contract claim.
But would there be a fraud claim that they did criminal defense and didn't do it?
Yeah, if you misrepresent somebody and then induce them into contract by the misrepresentation, maybe there is a cause of action for that.
It's really... because you always sort of think legal malpractice is hard in criminal law, because you generally, basically the person has to be, you know, innocent for a lot of those things to happen. I don't know. Like, it's just something that you see these hybrid situations all the time. People pay for other people's work all the time. But I mean, that sort of takes us back to the fact that when you're interviewing the lawyer, like, you really need to know if they've done that particular work before. And then it's easy to search if, like, you're going to a federal attorney, like, you can search Pacer, you can search some of the other internet search engines to see if that person has done other cases. But sometimes it's harder to find out in different state courts if that lawyer has represented people in the past in those types of cases.
Ask them. You got to ask straight out. You know, do you go to this jurisdiction? Do you know the judge? Do you know the prosecutor? What's typical there?
You know, what's funny is some people want an attorney that's not from that jurisdiction, because they feel like people that work in those, I've had cases where they say, I don't want an attorney that's from there. They're just going to do what the prosecutors want and play nice with everybody. I want somebody else. Like, it's funny when they call and want that situation. I don't like to go outside of, over the years, I've gone to different courts working in different firms. And I think it's easier to kind of build your practice just in a few courts and focus on those, so that you're not running all over the place and having to learn different rules. And there's different rules for discovery. There's different local court rules on how to get continuances or how to file motions or how to visit people at the jail. Like, everybody has different rules. And the more jurisdictions you go to, the more you have to stay up to date on all those things.
I think in bigger cases, I think there's certain types of cases where it doesn't matter as much, right? You know, like serious murder cases, those things like that, where you know you're probably going to trial. And if you can focus your practice on that case, it's a little less, you know, you're not trying to work out like, well, I'm going to make this reckless driving a speeding ticket. You're dealing with a much more serious situation where I think knowing the inside players, being an outsider, might actually be a little better. The person might make more discovery motion, might get more discovery, might be a little bit more feisty, because you're not playing in that sandbox all the time, right? Like, if I've got to be, you know, most of my bread and butter is not murder cases in my jurisdiction, and I, you know, my bread and butter is getting good deals from prosecutors, I don't want to piss people off by playing hardball in a murder case. And so maybe I get a good lawyer from outside that jurisdiction in the more serious cases. That's something to, I think, consider.
I think you raise a good point. I think you definitely do. There's a difference between, hey, you got charged going 100 miles per hour on a 55, and having an attorney who's familiar with what a prosecutor is going to want to see, whether it be community service hours, driving school, whatever else, in order to get out of a jail type situation. And if your case is, you know, a case that should be negotiated down, then you may want to have an attorney who's familiar with that area, practices there a lot, and can explain to you what it is that you should do. That may not be the same attorney who's going to be able to represent you in a murder case where it doesn't really matter how much community service you do. You're not going to really negotiate it down. It's going to be we got to prepare for a trial, and I need the best attorney wherever he is or she is. It could be in any part of the state. If they're willing to go to the far end of the state, opposite side from where they're at, then that might be the best person too.
Well, I want
to know who your attorney is going to be. Like sometimes the person you talk to is going to be your attorney. And sometimes there's other people at the firm or there's conflicts or there could be other lawyers or multiple lawyers handling your case. And that works differently for everybody. Some people just want to deal with one person. Some are okay with whoever handles their case as long as they know what they're doing and they're up to speed and they're good at what they do. So make sure that you ask those things too, so you're familiar with who's actually going to be handling your case.
Blake, did you have a point?
I did. I handled a case out in the I-81 corridor, a high-speed reckless case, well over 100 miles an hour. And the locals out there, they told this person, you're going to go to jail. You're going to go to jail for a while. The general district court judge always put people in jail. And I said, don't you ever take these to juries? And the locals out there looked at me like I fell out of a tree. And so I got hired, went out, put it in front of a jury, and my guy didn't go to jail. And so sometimes when you're not the local, the locals have a way of doing things that are just ingrained, and they don't make the arguments that somebody coming from outside makes. They're tired of, the judges have made rulings and the judges don't have to make the rulings anymore, like on calibrations or things like that. So sometimes having a new look can help.
But I mean, if an attorney's telling you that you're going to go to jail already, then what really do you have to lose by going outside of the locals? If like there's nothing you can do, you're shot. Then, at that point there, I don't, what's the issue? But if an attorney says you have a great chance of not going to jail by doing this, X, Y, and Z, which, there's some certain cases that you can't make guarantees. Obviously, you can never do that, but you can give a pretty good consultation, pretty good advice or prognosis, I guess. I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for, but a good idea of what the outcome is going
to
be.
You can get people to prepare their cases as much as possible. They can, you're like, look, you can't make the facts different than what they are, but you can, especially in the smaller cases, you can do community service. You can show all the positive things you're doing in your community. You can show that you're employed, that you're graduating from college, you've helped like the homeless, whatever it happens to be. Those things are good things. Give those to your lawyers so they have them for mitigation. Leave the legal stuff to the lawyers, and any, of course, evidence that you might have, give to the lawyers. But it is true that there are definitely times where you get in our local jurisdiction, certain things pass muster. Apology letters, saith David Lord, are really important. But Blake's right. Like there's times when people, if you don't push the envelope, as local lawyers, we all get in a rut.
That's true.
And if you don't push the envelope and say, let's, if you're going to go to, if all these guys are saying you're going to go to jail, then why don't we just try for a jury? Because juries don't like putting people in jail for speeding because it's like putting themselves in jail. And it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Like once again, you can't guarantee, like if your record is really bad and you're a jerk, juries don't like that either. So like, if you're just like everybody else who was like, I don't know how I was going 175 miles per hour on this motorcycle, sir, or 118 miles per hour in your like tiny, like on your Hyundai. By the way, if I got my car going up that fast, I think it would explode.
You'd be drafting somebody.
I'd have to be falling off a cliff. So
it'd be the tow truck driver driving that.
yes, exactly.
Which brings me to my next point. If you can find an attorney who's able to go back in time and change the facts of your case, you should probably hire that attorney, because sometimes that's the only way you're going to get out of it.
Well, and I think they're listed as motion to amend the facts is very effective.
Yes.
Motion to change your name.
I think that episode is Hot Tub Time Machine Lawyer.
I think what it comes down to is what we're trying to tell people. There's no right or wrong way to figure out who the best attorney is for you. You can Google them. You can check out their LinkedIn, their websites, their social media. You can talk to your neighbors or family or coworkers and ask for recommendations. But at the end of the day, it comes down to you talking to the attorney and feeling comfortable and having the confidence that they're going to handle your case in a way that'll try to get you the best outcome that we can get, because as we've all said throughout this episode, we can't make a promise. It's unethical for us to do that. So anyone promising you exactly how it's going to turn out, even if we've been in that court for 15, 16, 17 years and know how reckless drivings turn out, we still can't tell you on this case, this is what's exactly going to happen, because there's different judges, there's different prosecutors, you have different records, there's different types of how they clock your speeds. There's all sorts of things that happen. And all we can do is use the skills and the knowledge and the experience that we have to equip you to go into court with us to have the best fight that we can do, or that we can, you know, have for you. And so at the end of the day, you got to trust that your attorney is going to be there for you, that you can talk to them. And regardless of how much it's going to be, what they require of you, what you need to be looking at those things and find the person that fits into those things for you, because it's going to be different for everybody. Everybody wants different things.
Right.
They mean talking to more than one attorney. And
I encourage that, Tony, and you are right. Like, you have to.
Okay.
Even if it's embarrassing, even if you have to tell the story about why you picked up that DUI or whatever else you're charged with, and you don't want to tell somebody again, but getting a second opinion can really help.
And it's important to remember that the consultation is confidential. Even though you haven't hired that attorney, it's still attorney-client privilege. So you don't have to worry about that attorney then telling everybody else about what just happened to you, because that is a privileged conversation.
Many of the people that hire almost everybody has talked to more than one lawyer. Oftentimes when they ask a different referral source, like another lawyer who doesn't do the work that they need, they'll give them three names. It's just, I don't even know where that started, the three names of referral. So like, and the people call, and sometimes, you know, they hire the first one. Sometimes they call all three, but you just need to feel comfortable. If you've called one person, you don't feel comfortable with them, you know, take the time,
we know it's scary. Hire an attorney on your case for Monday when it's Thursday or Friday. And I mean, you've had time, and I get, sometimes you might have a death in the family, or you're trying to come up with money, or whatever the case may be. But if you want to hire an attorney and you're going to spend the money on an attorney, like we said earlier, we can't just flip our magic or wave our magic wand and just fix everything. Like, there's things we might need from you, and hiring somebody that late is either going to require a continuance to do the job right, or you're going to go in unprepared if you couldn't get a continuance. So you don't want that to happen. You want to have your attorney going into court for you with everything they need to fight for you.
And that's exactly. And somebody brought it up earlier today, as far as you may talk to one attorney and then somebody else will show up. I have a lot of attorneys who work for me, and sometimes I'll do a consultation, and 2 or 3 weeks later, the person will come back in, like Ann says, a day or two before court. And I'm like, 2 or 3 weeks have passed. I have been hired by other people to be other places. They came in and hired me while you were thinking about it or doing whatever you were doing. And I have an associate who's going to go over there, they're going to handle the case. And I like to think that I hire associates who are better than I am and are able to handle the cases just as good as I could do it. So be proactive. Don't be reactive. Get out there and find the attorney as fast as possible. Talk to him or her and make a decision. Be prudent.
One thing I will say is that sometimes we don't talk to lawyers early because we don't have the money. True. So as most of the lawyers on this podcast do like a 30-minute free consult, and there's a lot of criminal defense lawyers who do that. That's kind of an industry standard. Not everybody does. There's some people who charge for consults, but at the end of, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. If you can get a 30-minute free consult, you know, you'll get an understanding of what a lawyer might cost. So then you have an idea of what you can come up with, or if it's jailable offense, if you are going to need to ask the court so you qualify for court appointed. But don't not start your search because you don't have the money or right. You don't think you have it. At least start it, have an idea of what the costs are out there. So then you can make an intelligent decision, or know that you're going to get court appointed. There's nothing. And there's, I think we've all said this, I think, I don't know, 100,000 times on this podcast. We've had public defenders on this podcast that we, you know, having a court.
Some of us have been public defenders or court.
Yeah. Some of us have been public defenders. There's nothing wrong with getting a court appointed lawyer. And it's one of the most wonderful things about our system that you can get a court appointed lawyer for a jailable offense. But, you know, same with those lawyers. You, even though they're appointed to you, it doesn't mean that they don't have ethical duties and they don't have things that they need to do. But at the end of the day, shop early and put some money on layaway if you end up not liking that court appointed lawyer that you may or may not end up with.
That's right. Because you can always hire somebody after you get the court appointed lawyer. you can still hire somebody and they can substitute in for the case if you want.
And another thing we haven't talked about is when you hire an attorney, that's for their fee. It's not for your court costs or a program fee that you might be ordered into. If you need to get a court reporter or an expert or other things, a mental health evaluation, a substance abuse evaluation, there are certain things that are going to cost money. And those things are not included in the attorney fee. And they should be in the retainer that you're signing. It should have a section that says expenses or things like that and how that's going to work. And if it doesn't, make sure you ask the attorney about it, because if those things come up in your case and you're assuming that the attorney's taking care of that because it wasn't mentioned, you're going to be surprised when you get a bill for that court reporter or the expert or whatever the issue is, or that you have to pay fines and court costs or any of those things. And so make sure that you understand what you're paying for when you or sign a retainer for an attorney.
And I can say in my retainers, I explicitly talk about expenses, but I also tell people, look, we can have a court reporter or something for a hearing, but I'm going to always ask you before I schedule that, because it's an expense to you. It's not an expense to me. And so you're going to be making decisions about large expenses or any expenses that affect your bottom line. But those are conversations. You've got to be having those conversations with your lawyer. You need to understand the full cost of your representation. I mean, let's say you have a serious case, and let's just use, like, we can use murder. It's easy. It's like, let's say someone says it's going to be $100,000 for me to represent you on a murder. And included in that is, you know, $5,000 for this expert and $5,000 for investigator fees and $5,000 for a mitigation specialist, you know, or they'll talk about, like, what's the cost of this representation, right? Because you need those things. And I'm not saying that and the rest of it's legal fees, but there's a lot of expenses that go with serious cases. And I would say, I don't know, I would say probably 20% of serious cases retain. And if you've retained somebody for a serious case, by the way, and I've seen this happen before, where someone has hired somebody on like a 2-year payment plan of $10,000 for a homicide case, that person isn't spending the time with the case or has the experience to do that case. I mean, that's a red flag that's there's something wrong with that fee because of all the time that a homicide case takes.
What'd you say, Blake?
Yeah.
If you have to set out a fee like that for that extended period, you're never going to get paid.
Right.
I did have somebody in the jail one time offer to pay me $100 a month on a murder charge. I did decline that representation.
Well, very generous of them.
Well, my old boss, like what he used to tell us when people would try to negotiate, when you try to negotiate your attorney's fee down or you want to be on payment plans or things like that, he always told me, if your family and friends and or bank or somebody else won't lend it to you, like, why should the attorney? And that's essentially what you're asking the attorney to do when you want really long payment plans like that. And that's not our job. Like, I don't think any of us want to be dealing with collections or worrying about who's paying. Like, I talk to my clients about that up front, so it's clear and we know what's going on. I don't want that to be, it's a pain to have to pay an attorney in a situation like this. Nobody, you don't save up money wanting to pay an attorney in this situation, but it happens. And so when it does happen, you just got to make sure that you're clear with the attorney. What can you pay? If you really want to hire the attorney and you really can't afford it, it's not a good situation. And so you can't have that attorney. And that's just the way that it is sometimes. An attorney doesn't want you on a payment plan or having to pay money that you don't have. If you don't have it, you don't have it. And we understand that. But I don't think any of us on here right now want to be in a position where we're trying to collect money from clients. Like, it's not, we want to focus on our cases and dedicate our time to fighting for you. We don't want to deal with having to worry about the retainer not getting paid.
There's people that, you know, like if you're working on a serious case and someone's charging you less than, let's say someone charges you less than $15,000 in an underpayment plan for 2 years on a murder case. Most, now that there's a waiver for court appointed cases, you know, depending on the waiver money being left, many people who do murder cases, it's certainly not a guarantee to those lawyers, often get more than that amount of money. And there's money from the court for investigators and mitigation specialists and things like that. So there's a lot of things that a court-appointed lawyer can do. So if the lawyer that's quoting you so low, just to certainly, for whatever reason, bring your case in the door, when you know that you could have somebody who's, you know, more dedicated and you're not paying out of the little amount of money out of your pocket that you can, just be suspicious of people who are lower than what the court appointed rates are. That's just something to be suspicious about when you're looking at pricing. It's not always like people just are afraid sometimes of having a court appointed lawyer and they just should not be.
I agree. 100%.
Final parting thoughts for anybody?
Well, the last thing I want to go back to is just be careful with those reviews on the internet. It's very rare to find a criminal defense attorney with a whole bunch of reviews out there, because frankly, some of the best victories, those clients do not want anybody else to know that they were charged with something really serious. So exactly. It's not like you're going to have one of your clients going on the internet saying, I give this attorney 5 stars for getting me off that rape case. It's just not going to happen. So meet with a client.
There's also ways to collect reviews where they don't have to say what the charge is, but that you represented them. I've got a lot of reviews and they're all legitimate clients who were really happy with what happened. And I don't solicit them. I don't promise them things for them. I don't post fake ones. I disagree a little bit with the review thing.
I hate the reviews.
I think reviews, we all read reviews for anything. We read reviews and we try to figure out which ones are the more authentic ones and which one are kind of fake. And you can tell which ones are fake and which ones are not. And if I've read, and this is a plug for Anne, I've read Anne's review and they're all very unique. And I have no idea who any of her clients are. And, you know, she fights hard for her clients. The ones that take the time to write usually are pointing out that fact. But, there's a lot of things out there. There's also, be an educated consumer. I had a client one time say to me, I really like this lawyer. He did a great job. I got all suspended time on a DUI. I never went to jail. And I was a first DUI under 1.5. And I'm like, okay, so you could have had no lawyer and gotten that. I thought to myself, she thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread since he didn't go to jail. And it's just, that was her goal, was not going to jail.
He accomplished
that goal. But sometimes knowing that you would have had the option to go to trial and at least test the evidence and probably ended up at the same place. I think that people are not necessarily as educated about things and they're so afraid to go to jail that I think sometimes they choose representation that doesn't do them as much of a service.
But I also think the people on this podcast, we don't sell false hope. We're not telling people you're going to jail on the 80 and the 55. And we think we know that that does happen. We've all gotten the call from people that told us that they thought they were. And maybe if your record's in negative 50 or something like that, you might be going to jail on something like that. But I think we all know on a normal day, without a really a bad record or any other factors, that's not happening, right? And we can't promise it, and we'll tell them we can't promise it, but we can say this is what usually happens.
Unlikely,
right? Yeah, and that's how we explain it. But the bottom line is, an attorney should be being straight up with you and making sure that your expectations are clear. Because sometimes you, as the client, you have goals that we can't make happen, no matter what we do in your case, Right. And that's just something to think about when you're hiring an attorney, is you want somebody to give it to you straight and still fight for you. We can be real with you and still do everything in our power to get you that best outcome that we can.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, I have to say that it's so good to be back, even though I was a little bit off my game. I'm so happy to be back, and hopefully.
And also, it's so good to have you back as well.
I was waiting for that. Thank you, Tony, because I was starting to lose my words.
Alberto? Alberto, if it makes you feel any better, I didn't notice any difference. I didn't. I thought you were on your normal game, your A game.
It's pretty bad. Blake, how you doing over there? You all right?
I'm curious about the family that you photobombed at the Alamo.
Good job. There's a picture behind me so that everyone can get an idea what we're talking about. There's a picture behind me of my entire family in front of the Alamo. And, frankly, I actually look like somebody who fought there. But anyhow.
Yeah, you won.
We won. So I went back to visit the victory and took my family there. But yeah, Blake, good eye.
All right. Well, remember the Alamo. And on that note.
Yes. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining, Blake.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you, Blake.
Absolutely. Thank you, Blake.
I hope I'll be invited back.
You did a great job.
Thanks for joining us on Crime Time with Virginia Defense Attorneys. We hope you listen to our next episode.